Maybe. Let's see, we're supposed to start by, there are no significant financial disclosures. And I feel like we're taking a sudden left turn in terms of socioeconomic status here, in terms of the populations. And I want to begin, as everyone else does, by acknowledging my numerous colleagues and note that this is slightly different order than was in the program, particularly Kristen Ferguson, who is the leader of our work in LA, Kim Bender and Gretchen Heidemann, who were doctoral students. Kim Bender is now at the University of Denver, Dr. Thompson at Texas Austin, and myself at the University of Alabama. And I would have started by saying, you can see where the cities are, and I will say that if you'll note that I've been in Alabama a year, and before that, I was in St. Louis. So you can begin to kind of figure out why we picked the cities we picked. Basically, what we've been thinking about, this started out based on interest in migration, because there's a lot of discussion in the literature about street youth being migrant. There's also, at the same time, a discussion of, at the policy level, of how do we provide services for these youth, with the idea that the federal level policy of services for these youth is a unitary policy. But there is some evidence, limited, mostly qualitative and single city convenience samples, that suggests that perhaps migration is an issue and that youth who are migrant are different from those who stay in their community of origin. I do want to make a brief pause here because the title of this session is one that I must say I find somewhat annoying, because I want to make a very clear distinction here. This study is not about runaway youth per se. The range of runaway youth includes, according to the national policy, any youth who spends at least one night in a household in which there is not a legal guardian. These are not runaway youth, these are street youth. And so you need to not pay attention to the title of the talk, to the title of the session, but to the title of talk. By street youth, we are talking about youth who are disconnected in some permanent, either legal or psychological manner, from legal guardians, either parents or, in many of the cases, running away from the foster care system. So they're a very different population. This is going to become an important piece later when I try and put the data together and tell a meaningful story. What we're really interested in is whether cities look the same or different. And the little evidence there is, the one national data set, which is runaway youth, suggests that regionally there are some very significant differences. But what we really want to do is look more specifically and kind of disentangle this within specific areas. So we have a conceptual model, and I realized when I was looking at the download that in fact the Bender article is now out and there are two more articles in press, where we think about street youth in a number of kind of discrete categories. What we're focusing on here is the box on your right upper, which is really focusing in lower as well, which is really looking at youth as being estranged from mainstream culture and adapted into what Merton titled almost 50 years ago a deviant culture. And that how all of these together predict, as independent predictors, whether a youth is on the street in the length of time. So we have here, this is actually for those of you who are interested in research careers or who are far along in yours, what we have here is a pilot that has grown well beyond its initial idea, where we had started with wanting to look at whether we could use our instruments in one city and have gotten grants from each of the institutions and added the cities. So this is actually a pilot study that has, as my 14-year-old daughter said, gone tragically wrong. What this is, it's a convenience sample. The first two cities were in the summer and fall of 2005. The LA sample in the fall of 2007. It's a snowball sample where we recruited at drop-in centers and as ride-along and street outreach, using the youth themselves as key informants. We asked the youth at the end of the interview if they could sponsor us to another youth that they knew, or take us to a place where there were youth that they could sponsor us to. So this is not a population sample. This is a convenience sample that is done in identical manners in the city. So we can't talk about what this says about the population, but rather how the populations compare. And I want you to be very careful about that. One of the things I've noticed repeatedly in presentations around runaway and street youth is we're using these service-based and convenience samples to talk from an epidemiologic standpoint. And this is not an epi study. The interview included a kind of standard set of questionnaires around demographics. We did a variety of brief screeners for diagnoses. The part that we started out doing was an event history calendar, trying to figure out where youth, basically we were interested in the geography of transients. Unfortunately, when you do a pilot, you often find that the world is more complex than you had imagined. And in looking at youth transients, we found that, as you'll see, in some cases it was amazingly complex, and that asking a 24-year-old to recall every city that they were in and when, in a 10-year street career that includes multiple countries and dozens of states, we were not able to get very good reliability, not particularly surprisingly. What we were able to do was get a good read on where they started and where they were before they came to the city where we interviewed them. So this is the calendar recall method did not work all that well, except in the particular data points we're going to present. So let's begin to get to the findings and to tell the story of what we found out. Probably not surprisingly, if you're familiar with the three cities, the demographics are quite different, and they're quite different in ways that are really kind of sensible. That is, St. Louis tends to be demographically overwhelmingly biracial. Austin, the primary populations tend to be Latino and white, and LA is more of a mix. And not surprisingly, although I want you to hold this in mind later, descriptively, they don't look very different. There is a statistically significant age difference, but it's only a year. So this is one of those things we're not going to return to in any great depth, where the significance and the clinical significance don't seem particularly related. So here's where the story becomes painfully clear. If you look at the transients, this is the number of lifetime moves by self-report. The Austin sample reports that they moved an average of 11 different cities. St. Louis, the mean and the median, the median is 0 and the mean is under 1, and LA is around 4. So this is not a very difficult finding to interpret. They're different. A unitary interpretation based on transients doesn't make sense. And if you look at it in terms of length of time homeless, this is only really reinforced. As in fact, the three cities look very different, with St. Louis being the least transient and around the same statistically in terms of length of homelessness, and Austin being a great deal both longer in terms of months homeless. And this is a fairly impressive figure if you think about 90 months, where the sampling was 18 to 24-year-olds. So this is another one. One of the funny things about you see multivariate where the stories are very difficult to tell. Well, this is not one. This is Austin. This is St. Louis. And this is LA. And what you end up with is a very clear story geographically. None of the kids in the Austin sample were from Austin. Not any. About 80% of the kids in the St. Louis sample were from the state of Missouri, and about two-thirds of those from St. Louis, and the farthest city away is Jackson, Mississippi, or Cleveland, Ohio. And I'm sorry, I haven't MapQuested to tell which one is farther, but in terms of the Austin kids, that would make them in the nearest quintile. And LA breaks almost in the middle, where a third of the kids are from the LA area, a second third are from California, and the last third are widely dispersed, all including Boston, New York, Miami, and Seattle. So we see the beginnings of a fairly clear story emerging. And it's really more clear when we begin to look at substance diagnosis. And this is abuse and dependence. And you can look pretty much anywhere you want. It's very much the same story, that Austin is a city where if you add it all together, approximately 60% of the sample meets substance abuse or dependence, at least one, and most poly, whereas in St. Louis, it is around 1 in 5, and LA is almost almost exactly in the middle. So you have a population that is overwhelmingly addicted. And I think it's important to note that in Austin, the primary diagnosis is dependence. And again, if you think of the age, this is an adult diagnosis. And the amount of substance use you have to demonstrate to reach dependence criteria for someone who is under 24 is rather impressive. So this is not just hugely disproportionate to youth, it's hugely disproportionate to the adult population. It is, in fact, the Austin sample is the only population that we could find that it was comparable to are the adult homeless population. And here is that figure again. It's not real difficult to make the interpretation. So in looking at transients, though, we find something very odd. When we control for cities, in fact, and break the sample into high versus low versus moderate moves. We had to do that because none of the St. Louis kids qualified as highly transient and none of the Austin kids qualified as low in terms of transient. We found, oddly enough, that greater length of homelessness, now let me see, let me get this right. If you're diagnosed with drug abuse and dependence, you're less likely to be highly transient in terms of reporting multiple moves, which is, if you think about it, the opposite. But if you control for cities, it turns out that the kids who are using heavily are less transient, and that actually the association is around the city, not the transience itself. In terms of the initial question that I discussed, where I said, are there differences? Again, I don't think this is a very complex argument to make, is that the cities are extremely different both in terms of alcohol and drug abuse and dependence, transients and demographics, with St. Louis at one end and Austin at the other, and that transients is an extremely important variable when we think about addiction. So this leads us back to where we started, because historically, if you read through how we talk about street youth, we think about this as generically, if you read the older literature, we talk about it as a developmental trajectory, that youth run away, some move home, others stay running away on the streets, and eventually they become what the youth in Austin call travelers. But this is not really what the data look like. What we really seem to find is that this is a more heterogeneous explanation. That is, this is probably the case. I mean, one of the things that conceptually, you have to run away the first time to run away the second, or you have to move once to move twice. So it's undoubtedly the case that there is a developmental trajectory that's at least part of the story, but the data suggests, considering the number of months homeless versus the age differences, that in fact there is also a group that runs away and is immediately a traveler. And this maps very nicely onto the conceptual model that we talked about. But this also asks us what to think about these cities. Now, if you've been in Austin or in St. Louis, this is also intuitively obvious. Austin is cool. If you've been to Austin, they're very into this image of themselves as being different. And there is, if you look carefully, certainly I would say, having been in Austin several times, that this is a cool place to be. If you're from St. Louis, where I lived for 15 years and where my children were born, basically what we find is that what we believe is that St. Louis is not cool. Now, when we decided we were going to call it a cool and a not cool city, the provider who helped us in St. Louis was not happy with that. In fact, what we talk about, if you look, most of the St. Louis kids are from St. Louis. So what we've taken to thinking about them is that youth go to cities that are cool to find communities in which their estrangement from mainstream identification is shared by others who turn out to be behaviorally similar, whereas in St. Louis, what we think we're seeing are people moving around across neighborhoods doing a lot of doubling up. And unlike Austin, in St. Louis, you can only sleep raw for 3 or 4 months at a time. And we think that LA, since my colleague, Dr. Ferguson at USC says, you know, the problem is LA is not actually a city, it's actually a whole bunch of cities, is that what we're probably seeing is a LA is cool in certain places and neighborhood in others. So this is, we've been trying to kind of think through this causality. This is a cross-sectional study, it's retrospective and recall, but we were trying to kind of think our way through the sequence. And obviously, you start by running away. And one of the things we found in some of our other studies is that the running away is related, at least through the qualitative research, to families with difficulties, and that the strongest predictor of returning home for runaway youth in our shelter studies was having a family that was treatment involved. And so we think that this is a systems issue, that these are kids who are not really embedded in either healthy or particularly functional systems, and that the children move out, and that this is probably related, whether causally or caused by, substance use, which increases, and that transience is a way of looking for socially comparable others. So as I said in the beginning, this is a pilot study. We are currently adding our fourth and beginning to add a fifth site to this. This is going to be, before all is said and done, I'm going to stop saying that this is a pilot study, because we're currently moving into the field in Denver, which we think is potentially a cool city. And we're very interested. We're hypothesizing going in that Denver will look more like Austin than St. Louis, but we're hoping we'll find this, and that we're now going to use this data to go in to do a real sampling. We're going to use some of the adult homelessness literature to do a population-based sample in each of these four cities. We're also beginning to, we have some money now to do the same thing in New Orleans, and we're going to be very interested in what happens in an environment where the system leaves the kid as much as the kid leaves the system. I have no idea where I am with time. I can take a couple questions if people have taken their energy drinks. Thank you.
Do you think that cool cities are also cities that drugs are more readily available?
I am not sure that the evidence supports the availability of drugs. I think it is where it's socially acceptable. My tendency at this point is to think of this as more of a psychological phenomena rather than a availability of substances. Some data that I didn't present were that basically all of the 150 kids are using substances. The substance of choice varies, but at the age at which the mean is, alcohol and all of the other drugs are illegal. So they're all doing illegal behavior. So no, my feeling is, or at least our hypothesis at this point, is it's psychological, not availability or access. Other questions?
What's the tobacco usage amongst this group?
I wish I had an answer for that. We didn't ask that in the pilot.
Please consider it.
I think, for the R01, we will definitely be asking, because we did have a bit of difficulty with an interviewer who was allergic to smoke in Austin and had to do a number of our interviews outdoors. So use seems disproportionate.
So does that mean, since there's more movies in a lifetime in transient use that's in Austin, that Austin is, to put it, a more cool city than the other two?
That's the theory, is that Austin is a place you go to meet socially comparable others who are in the street culture. And in St. Louis, you're not estranged from your neighborhood.
But if that's known within the transient youth culture, why would it take on average 11 moves as opposed to like not just going there?
I don't have a good answer. We've been asked this question, and I think what happens is, and this would be something, one of the pieces we're going to add is ethnographic, is that many of the initial moves, at least from our pilot study, seem to be moves away from something. And it's only later in the transient's career that you begin to move towards. Does that make sense? That they don't go straight to Austin, and almost none do.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't ask that specifically, but the literature on street youth is pretty clear that this is, particularly for the ones where there are multiple runs, that they're going to be running from system-involved care. We only know anecdotally, but anecdotally, we heard that a lot. One more, I guess, and then onward in the back.
The question about the travelers and landing one place, I work at an agency in San Francisco, will be 11 travelers elsewhere. And I think at some point the entire travelers could like land and take share from the town. But I have a question about you mentioned that you sort of found you doing so well technique. How did you originally identify?
Initially we had someone identified by one of the staff in the drop-in or the outreach vans. So we used the same starting place.
Do you think you have full sampling of the population in every city?
Absolutely not. No, this is, I said this earlier, and I really want folks to make sure we make, this is a very clear point. This is not an epidemiologic study. It's a comparison study. My suspicion is, actually, I will state this publicly, and when you listen to the recording later on, I can see if I wince or not. One of the things that we really don't know is population, that I am unaware of a good epidemiology study for street youth or runaway youth. So I'm not sure anyone can say with any confidence this is what the population looks like. And in fact, we're going to propose, there was myself and Carol North used a population approach with adult homeless that we're going to propose, and hopefully we will get some data across these cities that is epidemiologic in nature. But the best studies out there are, generally speaking, very good service studies. So I think we can characterize the service population with a reasonable amount of confidence on the city level, with a great deal less confidence on a national level, and with no confidence at all when we think of these things from a standard epi perspective.
Thank you, Dr.